It's been almost a week since an unprecedented 2 million people turned out on the streets of Hong Kong, calling for the resignation of Chief Executive Carrie Lam. But more protests are already planned. So the question is, what is China going to do about it all? How does Beijing respond to these mass popular uprisings? I was in Hong Kong earlier this week as the events were unfolding, and so I want to take you there right now. I'm out on the streets of Hong Kong today in this sea of humanity. And it's not just students, it's not just young people. There is this huge cross-section of Hong Kong society here. But what's interesting about the things that are happening in Hong Kong right now is that even though the government has capitulated on the extradition legislation, the protests go on. People are still angry. People are still calling for the chief executive to stand down. So I want to find out what's driving that. What does this moment represent? This is Ivy. She is 24 and she's one of the many young people that are out here marching. Ivy, the government here has backed down on the legislation. Why are so many people still coming out?
The government has backed down, but they have not withdrawn the push for this legislation change. We want them to withdraw, to retract this legislative change.
There is something much bigger at play here, though. It's not just about the extradition laws, is it? What is Hong Kong fighting for right now?
We're fighting for the right of the one country, two policy system to be protected. We're fighting for our right, our freedom of speech, the freedom of press. And we're fighting to be able to live without fear. We don't want to live in fear. And I hope this is a real push for change. If not, it's still a very important event in our history.
Ivy's here with a friend. He's got something to say too. Do you think that this is about something much more than just legislation to do with extradition? Is something bigger at play here?
I believe this is about what we believe.
This is about who you are as a Hong Kong citizen?
Exactly, yeah.
And is that under threat?
I think so. I have faith in the Hong Kong people, but I think we need to stand up and speak up about it.
And are you prepared to speak up to Beijing? Because that, for many people, would be terrifying.
That's what we are doing now. We are here, we are protesting. I'm sure they're looking at us, and I hope they are listening.
Thanks very much. There is a long history of people power in Hong Kong, and a man who's written about that quite a bit is Anthony Dapperon. He's an Australian who's lived here on and off for 20 years. And I want to find out from him where to place this moment in the historical context. So there's a kind of complex history of chief executives in Hong Kong. Just explain for me why the position is so precarious.
The really important starting point to bear in mind is how the chief executive is selected and appointed. They are voted for by a committee of 1,200 of Hong Kong's elites, drawn from really across the business, professional and special interest groups community in Hong Kong, the majority of whom are loyal to Beijing. In addition, Beijing, in advance of that selection, usually very clearly indicates who their favoured candidate is, and that invariably is the person who is produced as the chief executive. What that means is that the Hong Kong chief executive does not serve at the pleasure of the people of Hong Kong. They serve at the pleasure of Beijing, and if Beijing requires Carrie Lam to stay in her position, she'll have to do that until they're willing to let her go.
And why would Beijing take that position?
So the first chief executive of Hong Kong, following the handover, Mr. Tung Chee Hwa, was in a similar position to what Carrie Lam is in now. He tried to introduce a controversial piece of legislation. Huge numbers of people came out onto the streets to protest. As a result, he withdrew the legislation, and shortly thereafter, he resigned. One of the other chief executives, C.Y. Leung, was incumbent during the Umbrella Movements. Now, he did not give any concessions during the Umbrella Movement protests, but caused a huge amount of dissatisfaction in the community, was seen to not have done a good job, and so at the end of his first term was not reappointed for a second term. So to have Carrie Lam now resign in similar circumstances to Tung Chih-hwa would be a pretty large loss of face for Beijing. And I think more importantly, Beijing would not like to send the message to the Hong Kong people that whenever we give you a leader you don't like, you can simply come out on the streets and kick them out of office. I think one of the real concerns is that Carrie Lam is going to be pushed back into something of a lame duck status with no effective power to govern. And into the vacuum that she leaves, Beijing is going to effectively step in and be even more proactive in their interference in the governance and administration of Hong Kong.
So these protests might actually have achieved the opposite to what the people of Hong Kong wanted.
Exactly, and that'd be a very unfortunate outcome, and I think, something that would be a bit of an unfortunate paradox.
Anthony Zapparan, thank you.
Thank you.
As far as you can see up Hennessy Road, all the way from Victoria Park to Admiralty, really, where the legislative complex is, it's just crammed with people today. There are still some strong voices of opposition in the legislature in Hong Kong, and I'm going to meet one of them now. Claudia Mo is an independent. She's a former journalist, and she's got some strong opinions. Claudia, you told me when we were chatting earlier that you feel you and your generation owes something to the younger generations here in Hong Kong. Why is that?
Thinking back, I do feel that people in my generation could have done more. Generally speaking, we could have been a bit more firm and maybe just a bit more determined in a way to fight for Hong Kong's freedoms and to safeguard our way of life. And so we are trying our best to do more for the young if we can.
Isn't the pathway that Hong Kong is on towards full integration with China inevitable? Isn't that the bigger story here?
I've been saying that, yes, and many Hong Kong people can see the trend too. I'm sure Beijing is rather fed up with Hong Kong since our umbrella movement 5 years ago, that Hong Kong is rather like some young delinquent who would refuse to learn to behave and be obedient and so on. And we are supposed to keep our way of life for 50 years. Now, just a bit more than 20 years on, they're trying to make Hong Kong disappear already. And we feel we're being cheated and fooled.
Well, that was Claudia Mo, you heard at the end, speaking to me in Hong Kong earlier this week. But let's go now to Louisa Lim. She's a former China correspondent for NPR and the BBC, and she's the co-host of the Little Red podcast. Louisa Lim, I'm interested to hear from you what you believe China thinks about all of this.
Well, I think China is really concerned. I mean, these massive protests on its peripheries are a massive issue. And of course, one of the things that worries Beijing is that people across the border will see what's happening, people in China, and will realize that radical action can gain results and might themselves be emboldened. So that's, of course, a huge concern. And then also there's the matter of Taiwan and how these dynamics are playing into the Taiwanese domestic politics. We're seeing that the protests in Hong Kong are turning voters in Taiwan towards the pro-independence camp and really helping the current president, Tsai Ing-wen, who's looking for a second term in office. So Beijing will be looking at that nervously as well.
So if we don't view this purely as a story about Hong Kong and the people of Hong Kong, but we view it as a story about China, what is that story then?
Well, I mean, the story is that China is having trouble controlling its peripheries. There have long been these restive populations in Tibet and Xinjiang, which are both inside China. Hong Kong has been a little bit different. It's been ruled under this one country, two systems model. And for a long time after it returned to Chinese rule in 1997, it was kind of seen as, you know, the goose that lays the golden eggs. But now it looks as if Beijing has got, you know, a really serious problem of massive civil disobedience and civil unrest in Hong Kong too.
So in your view, might Beijing get fed up and launch some kind of widespread crackdown in Hong Kong? Is that possible? Is that plausible?
Beijing is in a very, very tricky situation, actually, and it'll be really interesting to see how they play it. At the moment, their strategy has been to kind of basically put all the blame on the Hong Kong chief executive, Carrie Lam, basically throw her under the bus and try and divorce themselves a little bit from what has been happening. But clearly, if they put too much pressure on, if they were to go in hard, you know, with sort of violent action, then it would play even worse in Taiwan. And one of Beijing's long-term objectives has been to try and reunify with Taiwan. And so this model, this governance model that has been used in Hong Kong, one country, two systems, has always been seen as a model for Taiwan. And now Taiwanese, even pro-Beijing Taiwanese, are looking at it and saying, oh my God, we really don't want that. So you can see that they're quite boxed in their options.
Is it possible that Beijing might learn something from this experience? I mean, the comparison is made pretty regularly at the moment with how China responded, obviously, to Tiananmen Square, but also how in more recent times they might have responded to uprisings amongst the Uyghurs. Is it possible that as a result of this, Beijing starts to consider a more nuanced approach?
That would be interesting. I'm not sure. I mean, we've seen them very much play from the Tiananmen playbook. So to begin with, the protests were designated as a riot, and people who took part were seen as rioters, which has massive legal consequences. And then we're seeing Chinese officials coming out and blaming foreign forces for meddling. And it's interesting that even the language used is similar. So the foreign minister, Wang Yi, was talking about the black hand of Western forces. And again, this is very much from the Tiananmen playbook. But what's interesting and what's different this time is there is another layer of governance, which is the Hong Kong government, and they have had to play a more nuanced game. And actually, they have also suspended another bill about the national anthem, which was supposed to be tabled, because they realized that if that were to go through, then the protests would pick up steam again. So the dynamics are very complicated at the moment, and Beijing may have to look at different ways of dealing with this.
We heard a few moments ago Anthony Dapperan talking about the potential for these protests to backfire on what the community wants. So you and I bumped into one another, surprisingly, in the middle of that 2 million person march on Sunday night, and the optimism was clear, the fervour was obvious. But his view is that actually this might leave Carrie Lam as a lame duck leader. Beijing would leave her there. They wouldn't want to lose face by dumping her at this point. But the Beijing would actually just pull the strings behind the scenes more than what they already do. Is that a possible scenario, do you think?
Well, cynics would argue that that's a process that has already been in train for quite a while now. But I think we are quite likely to see some moves to tighten control. I think we're quite likely to see, and again from the Tiananmen playbook, more kind of patriotic education, more Chinese history classes being introduced into Hong Kong schools, probably more pro-China propaganda being aimed at the Hong Kong population.
There are plans by the protesters to return to the streets in pretty large numbers. Is there a clear roadmap for what happens
no,
next?
No, there's really no clear roadmap. And that's one of the factors with these kind of leaderless protests. I mean, I think in the short term, the next big date that we're looking at is July the 1st. And every year on July the 1st, which is the anniversary of Hong Kong's return to Chinese rule, there are protests. So it's quite likely that will become the next large protest. And we'll have to see what happens in the next few days to see just how many people will come out then. But it is a public holiday, and so that would increase the possibility of very large numbers turning out.
Louisa Lim, thank you.
Thank you, Hamish.
Louisa Lim is a senior lecturer at the Centre for Advancing Journalism at the University of Melbourne and a former NPR and BBC correspondent based in Beijing. She was speaking to me from Hong Kong.